Hi, this is Wayne Heinbach for Labor Express. One of the things that we seldom do on Labor Express is to talk about ourselves. And Labor Express is part of a group called Committee for Labor Access, which produces the program that you're listening to now, but also produces a cable TV show here in Chicago called Labor Beat. And one of our newest members, Chris Kaihatsu, recently had an experience over the past week or so that I think it's worth talking about, get a little bit of an idea about what's going on and some of the lessons that we can learn about this. And Chris, you were up in Madison for a conference to cover the protest at a conference. And in the course of that protest, you were arrested and you spent a good part of 4 days in jail. And you were there as a reporter for the Indy Media Center here in Chicago, and by implication around the country for your information to get out about what's going on. And could you tell us the details? What happened to you?
Well, Wayne, I was arrested in Madison and brought to the Kane County Jail, where I spent the better part of 4 days incarcerated while the district attorney of Philadelphia decided whether they wanted to extradite me for an arrest and charges that that I was charged with 2 years ago when I was in Philadelphia during the protests at the Republican National Convention.
But they didn't arrest you because of the Philly arrest. You were there covering the demonstrations and you wound up in jail because of that, right?
That's correct. I was there in Madison to cover protests at the United States Conference of Mayors. Mm-hmm. And it was only after my arrest and booking that I was informed the FBI had a warrant out for aggravated assault charges against me.
Right. And when you were arrested, what were you doing?
I was writing. I had two press credentials around my neck, one from the Chicago Independent Media Center and the other from the Madison Independent Media Center. I was writing, I was taking notes, I was trying to cover the events that were happening, that were around the protest, around the police detail, the police presence that was preventing public access from the Memorial Union across the street.
Well, let me ask. I mean, you weren't the only press person in Madison that was covering this event, obviously. And there were a lot of people from the alternative press, a lot of people from mainstream press, if you want to call them that. And you were part of that group, right?
That's correct. I was one of several reporters in that area, milling around in the same area as protesters and police.
And you didn't have a picket sign, you didn't have a banner. What I'm saying is you were a journalist. It was clear that you were a journalist. You had credentials as a journalist, and you were arrested accordingly, right?
That's absolutely correct.
Right. And I would assume that the reporters from the mainstream press that were there were not hassled or arrested in the way that you were?
I can't speak to other people's experiences precisely. What I can relate that's rather telling is as I was in the police van with six other arrestees, I noticed out of the window as the van was pulling away from the scene that there were at least two camera crews that were present in the street pointing their cameras at the scene and in basically the same position that the same exact precise position location that I had been arrested.
I mean, one of the reasons I think that this is important is that the alternative media has been able to bring out issues and ideas and events that the mainstream media either hasn't picked up or has picked up from its own point of view, if you will. And the alternative media gives a different perspective. And for that reason, the alternative media might be targeted if people were trying to control how an event looks. Do you think that that was part of the reality that you went through up in Madison?
Well, what I can say is that I certainly didn't see any mainstream reporters arrested. I can't speak to whether I was targeted. I can't speak to the motivations of the police or the county or the city or the state. But I can say that I was doing my job. I was trying to cover an arrest. I was trying to cover the event in general. And I certainly don't think that my arrest and the charges of disorderly conduct were warranted. I pled not guilty to those charges of disorderly conduct.
Now, I understand also that you had an option. You could have pled not guilty, as you did, or on no contest, in which case you would have gotten out of there and everything would have been over. Why did you plead not guilty?
Well, like I say, I can't see how my actions could possibly be construed as disorderly conduct. So any person or any entity who would make such allegations against me, I would flatly deny, no matter what the circumstances. That about sums it up.
Let's talk a second or two about why you were there. What were the protests about? I mean, this was somewhat of a national focus for demonstrations and part of, I guess, the international movement to be able to focus in on different events, different conferences to protest and bring up specific kinds of issues. What was happening in Madison that you went up to cover?
Well, Madison hosted the U.S. Conference of Mayors over this past week, last week, I should say, and it became the target of protests. I was able to divine about two common broad complaints against the conference. One was that it was taking place behind closed doors. It was not readily available to the public. It was protected, if you will. It was ringed by a police presence to provide security for the conference. And another large complaint that I heard from protesters was that it was heavily funded by corporate interests, including Philip Morris and other large corporate interests. So those are probably the two main points of objection that I could find out.
And how are the jails up in Dane County?
Not very good. I was in a cell block that had two rows of four cells each that all faced inward into a common area. And I was told to sleep on the floor on a rather old, ratty mattress and or mat, like a wrestling mat, and given linens. And so for those 4 days, I was sleeping on the floor, dust, dirt around. It's all concrete. And so effectively, they had 10 people in a cell block designed for eight. And the main complaints that I heard from inmates were around issues of healthcare within the prisons that they were in, and I could go into more stories. But suffice it to say, I mean, my own experience was that jail is no place to be, and it's certainly not made to be comfortable or even necessarily humane for inmates who must spend time there.
And for what you said before we went on to do the interview, that you put your time to good use. You were able to do some interviews and hopefully be able to develop a couple of articles off of some of the conversations you had with your fellow inmates. But also, let's go, you started off by talking about the reason that you were in jail. It wasn't just because of the arrest in Madison, but because of a previous arrest in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. What was that about, and why did that have an effect on what was going on in Madison?
Certainly. At the time of my arrest in Philadelphia, this is August of 2000, early August, I was covering a lot of the protests that were happening, not as a credentialed reporter at that time. I simply went to the city with a camcorder of my own, and I was running around and getting a lot of video footage that I personally thought was valuable. At the time of my arrest and charges leveled against me in Philadelphia, I never received that camcorder or that footage back. It was never listed on the inventory sheet. It was simply handwritten in when I complained to one guard. And then the prison system said that a written addition to a printed inventory list is not valid, and they couldn't find it anyway within their prison inventory. So I never received my personal property back either from Philadelphia or from Kane County. I received my clothing back from Kane County, but my personal effects, like my fanny pack and the contents of that fanny pack, were never returned to me nor listed on the inventory sheet.
I mean, it sounds like one of the things that the people who do these arrests do is to try to prevent the story from getting out. I mean, that's one of the reasons for it. And actually, I remember way back in 1968 in Chicago, a lot of the press, the mainstream press at that time, which was showing things that Mayor Daley at that time didn't want shown, were also arrested and beaten up and everything else. We're not quite there yet, but they are going, it seems, at least after the alternative press. Let's talk for a second about what that means. What is the alternative press, you know, alternative media? When you were up in Madison, you weren't there for Labor Beat or Labor Express. You're now part of our family, but you were there for the independent media. Could you talk about what that is and why it's so important and something that we need to protect?
Certainly. My experience with the alternative media has been mostly reading alternative publications. But when I was informed by an associate back in August of 2000, soon after my Philly experience, that there would be a Chicago affiliate of the Independent Media Center forming in Chicago, I was immediately interested, and I've been on board since the beginning of that and ever since. My impression of the Independent Media Center network has been nothing but positive. I think it's excellent to have organizations in different cities and different localities where volunteers can simply organize, affiliate themselves, be part of a group that does independent reporting on whatever issues they deem to be newsworthy. So that's essentially been my role heretofore. And it's been an excellent experience being able to use very good technology and my own writing abilities and skills to be able to go and document events that I think are newsworthy. I'm able to collaborate with like-minded people. I'm able to do a lot of the technical work that needs to be done on my own computer. We also have shared space for meetings and for computer and internet access. Altogether, it's just been a fantastic project. It's going on globally. There are dozens of IMC affiliates all over the globe on all continents. It's absolutely incredible, and I'm really glad to be part of making it grow and helping it grow.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit older than you are. The technology to me is quite frightening in the sense of how quickly the information can get out. Your arrest in Madison in the old days would have gotten around, but it would have taken its time. This way it was almost hours, within hours, people could have known every place in the world with what's going on. And that's what I think is so important for us and so frightening to the people who don't want that information out. And that's so important for what we're trying to do to get out the word about what's happening in our country, in our society, and in our world, really. One final point, just to make sure everything's crystal clear. When you were arrested in Pennsylvania, you didn't skip bail, right? I mean, you weren't trying to get away with something. Could you explain what that was and why you're in the situation you're in?
Certainly. After my arrest in Philadelphia, I was charged with 3 counts of aggravated assault. I'd like to also point out that all protesters, everyone arrested during that event, were given pompous, pumped up, inflated, false, distorted, twisted, absolutely insane charges. I remember one person, John Sellers, with the Ruckus Society, who was given $1 million bail because Philadelphia police believed that he was an organizer and somehow that bail would be justified. In the course of preliminary trials and eventually regular trials, the city lost case after case after case against the people that they arrested around the Republican National Convention. And in my own case, the 3 felony counts were immediately dropped by the judge, and I was left with a number of summaries. And I was told that I would have a court date, it would be mailed to me, and I was more than willing to see the case through and to, and I still am, and to bring it to a closure. I received a summons to appear in Philadelphia court, and the summons arrived sometime in September, and it was for the exact same day that I received the notice. So somehow I was supposed to be in Philly on the very same day that I received the summons in Chicago. And I immediately notified my lawyer. He informed me in the months afterward that my name never showed up on the court docket. So I made all good faith efforts to stay in touch with my lawyer and in touch with R2K Legal. And to this day, I haven't heard anything from the court itself. And as I said, my lawyer said my name never appeared on the court docket.
Right. So, I mean, this is a series of circumstances that hopefully will not be repeated. And we can also hope that this was a combination of things that were somewhat accidental rather than a targeting of the alternative media. And that's one of the things that I think in this day and age with the conservative onslaught on civil liberties and civil rights and everything else that's going on has to be fought and has to be exposed. And that's one of the things we try to do here on Labor Express, and I'm sure that's what you're trying to do as part of what we are now with the Committee for Labor Access and with Independent Media. And we're talking with Chris Kahatsu, who had some nice experience talking to people in the Dane County Jail when he was arrested after a demonstration up there. And I'm sure things will work out, Chris. And thank you very much for the reporting, and we're looking forward to working with you with Labor Express and Labor Beat.
Thank you very much, Wayne.